Hello, welcome to another Pharmacy in Practice podcast. Quite a tough topic today, but one that I think we need to look at. So we've got an investigator from the Health Safety Investigation Branch to discuss one of their very thorough and well-researched recent investigations. Would you like to introduce yourself, Daniel?
Yes, certainly. Good morning, Jonathan. I'm Daniel Owens. I'm one of the national investigators at the Healthcare Safety Investigation Branch, and I led on the report we're going to talk about this morning.
Excellent. So the report we're coming on to talk about focuses on propranolol that every pharmacist will be very, very familiar with. So we all in our community, we all know that propranolol is widely used to treat migraine and anxiety and other things these days. And it can be toxic, of course, when as all things can be when taken in overdose. I'm gonna ask you to sort of set the scene, but I mean, I'll just mention that the investigation in question highlighted that the risks of around propranolol and other beta blockers are widely. They're not widely enough known by medical staff across the health service. The report says whether issuing prescriptions to at-risk patients responding to overdose calls or carrying out an emergency. And this particular investigation that we're going to focus on investigated a 24-year-old woman called Emma. She took an overdose of both propranolol and citalopram. Emma called an ambulance, but her condition quickly worsened. And despite resuscitation efforts from both paramedics and medical staff in the hospital, she was transferred, but she sadly died. I'm going to ask you to sort of set the scene and delve into to the context, because with your investigations, my understanding is the way you do it is you focus on a case. But I was sad to learn that before we spoke that I didn't realise this. Emma actually had a degree in pharmacy, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. That was her first degree.
Very sad. Okay. Would you mind setting the scene around the case and some of the pertinent points, and then we can sort of have a chat around it, Daniel?
Yeah, certainly. So, as you said, we structure our investigations around what we call a reference case, a reference event. So, an actual incident that occurred somewhere out in the healthcare system to patients and staff. The reference case that helped us sort of guide our national report was Emma's case. And as you said, Emma was a 24-year-old young lady. She was working in the NHS as a clinical scientist. Probably worth taking through just some of the background before we get to the sad day in question. Emma had a previous history of having anxiety from quite a young age. Around 16, she'd been originally placed on propranolol to treat some of the physical symptoms of that. Her family describe her as very high achieving, a perfectionist, someone that really wanted to do their best all the time and could be quite anxious if they felt they couldn't do that. Shortly after she developed anxiety, she also developed migraines, which we understand from her mum running the family, and she was later prescribed propranolol for a migraine as well. After a period of not taking these drugs, because she seemed to improve anxiety and migraine wise, the report very much focuses in from when she started care at a new GP practice, which was in around March 2017. At that time, Emma transferred to the practice having a diagnosis of migraine. She was being prescribed maximum dose of propranolol available for that. In addition, when she first attended her new GP practice, she described that she had thoughts of self-harm. She was very low mood, depressed, had thought about harming herself. And what the report detailed is that the primary care she received for that was very good. She was referred to the correct services. She was correctly risk scored. People were there to support her through that period. But as part of this, she was also prescribed antidepressants, initially sertraline, and then subsequently citalopram. So Emma was engaged with the practice from March 2017 to around June 2017, and in June she reports that she's feeling a lot better, she can push forward, she's more confident, And the family report that actually later in that year in September, she was able to go on a work placement to New Zealand and travel New Zealand and had a fantastic time. During that period, she's receiving repeat prescriptions for propranolol for her anxiety, propranolol for her migraine, citalopram for her depression. And the GPs are saying, well, these will possibly help with some anxiety symptoms as well. And then we get to January. Emma hasn't been in contact with her GP practice since June. Her family thinks she's doing a lot better. Work see that she's doing a lot better. But in January, Emma places a call to 999 to say that she has taken an overdose of propranolol and citalopram. And what's really upsetting about the story, I think from everyone's perspective, and particularly the family, is that no one knows why. Emma was in good mood. She was making plans that day. But her family described that there was some sort of, I think her dad told her that the tidal wave of emotion, something must have come over Emma for this to happen. And very quickly she took a significant portion of propranolol, potentially up to 6 grams, because they were the packets found at her address. We're not sure how much is halopram. But when she placed a 999 call, it's detailed in the report, she says, I took the pills, but I don't think I really meant to do it. So instantly, the 999 service books a call, ambulance is dispatched. There's a little delay in the ambulance getting there, but what the report then focuses on is very much once you've taken that overdose and once that significant proportion of propranolol is in the system, there was sadly very little that could be done to save Emma. And despite advanced resuscitation attempts in the ambulance and at a trauma centre, she sadly passed away.
Goodness. I mean, it doesn't get any worse, Daniel. How are the family now? Have they been in touch with you and so on and so forth around the report?
Yeah, so as part of our investigations, we engage very heavily with families. That's included. We've been to the coroner's inquest to meet the family there. We've been to their house on a few occasions to talk to them, to produce our report, to share things with them. Families are really important to what we do. And certainly when we spoke to them last, after the report was published, it's horrible for them. They can't move on, as any family can't. That grief is always there. But certainly having gone through the investigation process, they're really hopeful that if anything can come from it, if it can improve the outcome for just one patient, they'd find that fantastic, because all that suffering they've been through, and obviously what happened to Emma, something will come out of it that may be positive.
Yeah, that's the hope, I suppose. And I mean, you know, I'm sure the thoughts of all our listeners will go to them, especially especially the link to pharmacy. The fact that she had a pharmacy degree and so on was will hit home. You know, this is a young, fit, healthy on the outside young woman. She was only 24, traveling, doing all the things that youngsters do these days, you know. And so it's the point I'm making there, I think, is that it's particularly pertinent for me that if such a talented, educated young person can be caught out with this type of thing, then it's certainly worth raising and talking about. What are the top line findings then in the report? What before we go on to what you want, you know, what needs to change? What did the report reveal?
I think it's probably firstly important to say, and what we were very keen to say throughout the report, is that propranolol for many people is safe, it's effective, it's useful, and we don't want this report to scare individuals, particularly or practitioners, from thinking about propranolol in their prescribing decisions. But what we go on to then say is, well, actually there may well be an understanding in a group of people for which propranolol may pose more of a risk that we maybe need to be more aware of. So I think the first thing to talk about with propranolol in that sense is it's an older drug. We know it's been around for quite some time, from since the 1960s. Initially a cardiac medication, but increasingly prescribed in fewer and fewer cases for cardiac conditions because of the advances in other drugs. So actually the patient group that we originally envisaged this drug would be prescribed to has probably changed. And from what we can see and what we can find in the investigation, that is probably now patients with migraine or patients with physical symptoms of anxiety. So the actual patient demographic may have changed. Within that, particularly when we talk about prescribing to patients with migraine or prescribing propranolol for anxiety symptoms, there's a bit in the report where we talk about the potential links between migraine, depression and anxiety. And actually those are quite closely linked. I think we say in the report around 50% of patients with migraine will experience depression, and there's a similar link between depression and anxiety. So as the demographic of patients has changed, we're now prescribing propranolol to a group of patients that may well subsequently be at risk of harming themselves. There are a significant group of patients that potentially are taking propranolol for migraine or anxiety that could potentially have these thoughts. And particularly with Emma's case, because what the report highlights is she did have suitable support from mental health professionals. She was able to access support if she needed it. It was an overdose that really didn't need to be planned. And there was no sense that she wanted to harm herself before this point. But because of the way in which we prescribe propranolol to this particular group of patients, she was able to access a significant quantity of propranolol without stockpiling, without misusing her medication, that was able to kill her. And that was without anyone essentially operating outside of what we think is normal. She received appropriate prescriptions, appropriate dosage, an appropriate length of prescription, but she was still able to access this because we don't necessarily understand that this is a drug that, particularly when taking an overdose, is very hard to treat and is very effective, unfortunately, in killing people.
I mean, one of the things that struck me, and I'm going to read out the findings, particularly, I know there's findings in the ambulance response and in the emergency care side of things, but I'm going to read out the primary care ones in a minute, just for completeness. I know I'll link to the report and so on, and we did a bit of a story on it, but I'd like to be quite explicit about that. But the thing that struck me, Daniel, when I first came across this report was the word propranolol, to be honest. Now, anybody that's worked in a community pharmacy across the UK or Ireland will know, like, this is probably in the top 50 prescribed drugs in the UK. It's certainly, I mean, I don't know if my pharmacy that I used to run as representative, but it certainly was. So that when you're risk assessing things, I mean, if a drug is used so ubiquitously, then the frequency of use and therefore the likelihood of something happening comes into play, doesn't it? Was that considered in the report? I mean, for example, did you guys know that propranolol was so widely used?
Yeah, what we refer to in the report is the frequency of use. There's some data in there from NHS England. And I think on average, we're at about between 450,000 to 500,000 prescriptions of propranolol per month in the NHS in the UK. So very widely used. And the incidence of harm is, compared to the prescription numbers, potentially relatively low. So we refer in the report to some data we've received from the Office of National Statistics looking at deaths. And propranolol deaths, I think 2017 was the last year we referenced, was around 52 deaths that year. But that's increasing. And what was really interesting during the investigation, Jonathan, is all the professionals we engaged with, so emergency department consultants, pharmacists, ambulance technicians and paramedics, beyond that data set, they all reported that they perceived that there was an increase in this overdose occurring. And they were all able to describe to us an instance of propranolol overdose in the last few months that they'd seen or they'd observed. Wow. So beyond the data set, speaking to professionals, they felt there may be something going on around this drug that we've reflected in the report to complement the data set. But I think that was very powerful for the investigation team.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's a non-specific beta blocker, isn't it? So it's a drug that has effects. I think originally it was seen as a cardiac medication, wasn't it? But more recently, it's really the side effects that have been spotted to be helpful. And of course, one is reducing the chances of anxiety and so on. I'm going to read these primary care recommendations out because I think it's important. So you find that propranolol is a cardiac medication, but is now predominantly prescribed for the treatment of migraine or anxiety. And I was interested to read in the report that that change in indication is key, really. Propranolol is widely used by many patients without incident and with clinical benefit. You've covered that very well. There's a specific group of patients who may be at increased risk of using propranolol for self-harm because they have coexisting migraine, depression or anxiety. Covered that as well. Current guidance for prescribing propranolol does not contain sufficient warnings regarding the potential severe toxicity of propranolol when taken in overdose. Current awareness of the potential impact of propranolol in overdose is limited and hinders the ability of prescribers to exercise clinical judgment when choosing to prescribe propranolol. And there's a lack of published research and guidance on how propranolol may interact with antidepressant medication when taken in overdose. And finally, propranolol is licensed for use to treat anxiety symptoms as reflected in the BNF, but clinical guidance regarding when and how it should be used in practice is not available from the National Institute of Health and Care Excellence. So with those things in mind, what in your view do you think needs to change, Daniel? And who needs to action it as well?
Yeah, I mean, in regards to that, we made a number of safety recommendations in the report, particularly around primary care. And as you say, the report also covers ambulance response and emergency treatment, but to focus on the primary care element, we made recommendations to the BNF and to NICE, both to review and update their guidance in regards to the use of propranolol, particularly in the treatment of anxiety, and the advice provided in regard to overdose. Just to add to that point, the use of anxiety element, as you've said there in the findings, that's not set out in NICE guidance, but it is in the BNF. And certainly in the report, we do comment on potentially a lack of evidence and research to support the use of anxiety. That's not to say it should or shouldn't be, but certainly what we call a safety action. So something that someone is doing as a result of the investigation is that the Medicines and Health Regulation Agency, the MHRA, are looking into their guidance as well at the moment in regard to when and how propranolol could be prescribed and what the licence covers. In addition to that, in primary care, there was very much a focus on trying to raise the awareness to some extent. And it's something that we do in some of our reports, but we appreciate raising awareness isn't necessarily the strongest barrier to prevent incidents occurring, but with propranolol, it was very much the start of this process. And what we've done is make recommendations to the Royal Pharmaceutical Society, to the Royal College of General Practitioners, and to an organisation called PressQuip, which supports primary care prescribers, very much with a view to sharing this story, getting the message out there, because I think the key thing is what you touched on in the findings there, Jonathan, is actually what we're trying to do is make sure that when prescribers are presented with a choice, they can actually make a more informed clinical judgment. And at the moment, the resources supporting prescribers around propranolol may not help them to do that in the way we think they maybe should.
And that's, you know, as a prescriber, that's pretty damning, really. Let's be honest about that. And I don't wish to be sort of sensationalist or anything like that, but I guess running that into my next question, I mean, and this is a sort of broader question that you may or may not be able to answer in your position, but, you know, what's your view on the sort of post-marketing surveillance of medication in this country? I mean, it feels to me like this episode or this issue has kind of crept up because the indications have developed, and maybe I'm focusing on that too much, but that does happen with a lot of other drugs as well. So, you know, what's your view around how we keep an eye on that and identify risks that emerge?
It's not something we looked at specifically in the investigation, but one thing that I think does feed into that is something we saw in the investigation that felt somewhat analogous. So that idea of aftermarket surveillance, what we saw in the investigation and what we drew some comparisons with in the report which are icyclic antidepressants, another group of medications from about the same period that very much became an item to be concerned about some time ago, because we realised what kind of impact they could have on patients in overdose. And from what we understand, that knowledge was gained from very much some of the information we get in this report. So clinicians noticing this, people realising there's a problem in the professional community. I think potentially less than the regulatory community, but again, I've not gone into a lot of detail on that. But we may be in a similar position with propranolol, where we've got a drug where it's actually the professional community that are starting to alert about this because of the change in use. And anything the community can do to be vigilant, to raise these concerns and make sure that we're aware of this, can strengthen agencies like ourselves, knowing there's a risk there, and potentially be able to do further work to examine that risk, to investigate and share the learning we have. But going back to the point, I'm not sure currently what the state of aftermarket surveillance is from a regulatory standpoint. I mean, that could be something interesting for us in future investigations if there's concern out there in the pharmacy community around that.
I think there's just, you know, anecdotally there's been a lot of work done, and your example spot on, the tricyclics, so that's the anticholinergic burden you're thinking of. The drug that comes to mind as a pharmacist is amitriptyline, and of course it was originally marketed as an antidepressant in doses 25 to 50 milligrams and above, I believe. But more recently it's been used again very ubiquitously for neuropathic pain at lower doses of 10 milligrams. But of course you give amitriptyline to a tricyclic naive elderly person and the anticholinergic burden kicks in and the falls risks increase, and you know, so there is precedent. I just asked the question because I wondered, is there a wider conversation to have about how we monitor drugs in that regard? And maybe I'm naive in that space as well, and it already happens, but it just, from what I see, it doesn't really feel like it. So Daniel, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're extremely busy, and I mean, this podcast is just a little summary of the report. I mean, I strongly recommend pharmacists and pharmacy technicians and actually other, you know, doctors, whoever's listening to this, to go and have a read of that report. What are your final thoughts? I mean, I know it's very important to, well, it's important to me to raise awareness of the report in and of itself so that people access it. But for you, what are your closing thoughts on this in terms of Emma and the case in general?
I think it is very much that we've been able to tell Emma's story with the support of the family. And certainly what they wanted from this is just the ability to raise that level of awareness and to help prescribers and professionals account for this risk when they're making decisions. And exactly as you've said, if people do have the opportunity to read the report, please do. Hopefully that can explain this in a bit more depth. And also we talk about the ambulance response and emergency care response as well. But for us, it's this first step towards understanding the change in use of this drug and where the risk may be. And we do appreciate any drug taken in sufficient quantities can be very hazardous. But there seems to be something, particularly about propranolol, in how it works when you take too much of it, that makes it very hard to save people. So our focus is very much on making sure we know who we're giving this drug to and that we can account for that risk as early as possible.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much for coming on. I would close by saying that I highly recommend, in addition to the report, listeners and readers go and start following the health safety investigation branch. There's some very pertinent investigations to pharmacy on there. This is not the first podcast we've done, and I'm very hopeful that we can continue to draw attention to the very thorough and detailed work that you do, Daniel. And listen, just thanks very much for your time, and you know, thoughts are with the family, and if you're seeing them, please pass on our regards.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan. We really appreciate the chance to speak to you.
Pleasure. All the best.
You too.